is the South Washington County Bulletin podcast for March 14, and I'm Managing Editor Patricia Dre Bussey. This new podcast is just one more way we're trying to help keep you informed about what's going on in Cottage Grove, St. Paul Park, Newport, and Gray Cloud Island Township. In today's show, I'll be talking with Cottage Grove Police Captain Pete Kerner about a public meeting held this week on the February 28 break-ins at the Cottage Grove Park and Ride lot. But first, here were some of the top stories this week. The Cottage Grove Courthouse in the Armory Building is closing July 1 due to a tightening state budget, and the court operations will be moved to Stillwater, according to County Court Administrator Christina Volkers. The change will mean more travel time and waiting for Cottage Grove police officers when they appear in court, said Cottage Grove Public Safety Director Craig Woolery. The hours for a court hearing officer based at the Armory will increase after the closure, Woolery said. The three plans for new school attendance boundaries in School District 833 have made it all the way up to the High School Attendance Boundary Task Force, but the High School Task Force had a little trouble finishing its proposed boundary maps this week. After debating the plans late into the night on Tuesday, the task force decided to reconvene Thursday. They ultimately were able to get down to three maps, but task force members disagreed about whether to attach those maps to those previously created by the elementary and middle school task forces. Ultimately, the high school task force did attach maps to each of the three existing plans, but left it up to the oversight committee to make changes as it sees fit. The committee will meet March 18, and you can see the high school maps on our website at www.swcbulletin.com. District 833 elementary schools are having their first ever art show through March at the District Service Center. The art show opened Monday, and guests were served cookies and punch and entertained by elementary school orchestra students. Art specialists began teaching at the elementary school level last fall. The tax bill passed by the Minnesota legislature and signed by Governor Tim Pawlenty contained a little extra money for Newport. The city will get an additional $450,000 in local government aid over 6 years. Newport City Administrator Larry Bodall said the city isn't looking for handouts, but it's still suffering from the Highway 61 and Wakota Bridge construction projects. Bodall said the extra money will help Newport keep its tax levy flat or lower it for 2009. For more on these stories and others, visit www.swcbulletin.com or pick up the March 19 South Washington County Bulletin. Next, on February 28, about 30 area commuters got off the bus at the Park and Ride lot in Cottage Grove after work to find that the windows on their cars had been broken out during the day. On Tuesday, the Cottage Grove Police Department held a public meeting about the incident, during which a Metro Transit officer reported that the agency has promised to install video surveillance cameras at the lot by the end of the year. I talked yesterday with Cottage Grove Police Officer Pete Kerner about the incident. I'm here at the Cottage Grove Police Department talking with Captain Pete Kerner about the February 28 vandalism. First of all, what is the latest information that you have on the vandalism?
You know, other than the original reports that we took on the 28th, we haven't had any suspect information that's been developed as of yet. So our crime board has offered up a $500 reward. We're asking people to call our tip line, which is 651-458-2801. I think this is another one of those cases that will definitely be, hopefully, you know, someone out there has information that they can get to us, and that's how we'll crack the case.
Mm-hmm. What do you think that the people who did this were after? What was their motivation?
You know, it really surprised me that there was as many windows smashed out as there were. You know, there's 28 vehicles. We've done a lot of crime prevention tips over the last 2 years, and the riders down there, the citizens, had they did everything we asked of them. They didn't leave a lot of valuables out, so that's the only thing I can think of is there was a few cars that things were stolen, but most of the people using the park and ride, they're not leaving all their things out. So, mm-hmm. But those that did have like electronics out and things like that, that's what was stolen.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And how common are break-ins at the park and ride lot?
You know, they're not as common as, you know, But when it's happened, like the last time on the 28th, we had 28 cars. Mm-hmm. So obviously that's a huge impact to people. We have just as many car break-ins throughout the neighborhoods. You know, it goes sporadically through the summer. We'll have a group of teenagers out that hit cars and stuff. So kind of broke it down, and not by incidents, but just by dates. And 2006, we had 7 days where there's incidents. 2007, there's 8 days. And this year we've had 4 days where things have been reported. And this was the first time that it was vandalism or theft-related. Most of our calls down there have been, you know, service ones like lockouts or some driving complaints, people doing donuts and things, you know, are driving through the lot recklessly. So it is pretty isolated, I would say.
So the same thing could happen to you if you're parked in front of your house too overnight. It's just kind of luck of the draw.
Right. And that's, you know, that's unfortunate. You know, when the residents, when they park down there, you know, you're at work. At least at home, you can take some measures. You're home. Mm-hmm. You're looking out occasionally. When you're at the park and ride, you know, you're leaving, you're leaving your car there, and you're hoping nothing happens to it for that 8 hours when you're at work. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, the chances are it can happen just as, you know, in Target lot, Cub lot, but, at least at those lots, you have a lot more people coming and going throughout the day. You know, even at the park and ride, we have watched. There's a lot of trends. We have a lot of different people using the lot during the day. Treasure Island was coming out for a shuttle bus. Some different services shuttle through there. People are shuffling their cars. You know, mom might take it in the morning, then someone drops them off and picks up a car. So there's a lot more traffic than what we thought there would be. But it just seems like that the location, you know, there's a major highway that goes by there, but there are some blind spots. There's the berm in the center that kind of, you know, and it. I still think when you come in, whatever way you come in, people are gonna, they can see that you're coming as well.
Mm-hmm. Was this incident one of the worst that you've seen at the park and ride?
Definitely. I mean, this was, like I said, we had 28 cars. In 2006, we had a couple incidents where cars were actually stolen, and that's, we had a citizen report. They were in a stolen car. They didn't know it was stolen, obviously, but they had reported a stolen vehicle, and ended up, we had a pursuit with the vehicle, ended up in St. Paul Park, and we had made multiple arrests. And but as far as just the amount, this is by far the most.
Mm-hmm. Have you talked to law enforcement officials in other cities about this, and are they experiencing similar things at their park and ride lots?
You know, yes and no. We send out emails to our investigator group throughout the metro when we have these. It's pretty sporadic. Most of our communication is with the Metro Transit Police. If it happens in whatever city versus just hoping that if it happened like in Maple Grove or Eagan, we go right through the Metro Transit. Every incident we have down there, we send them a copy of the report and kind of coordinate with them as well. So pretty good communication that way.
Okay. And what was the police department doing before this incident took place? And then now that it has taken place, are there any additional steps that you are taking?
Prior to this, you know, we've looked at trends. Over the summer, we've seen that's when we have more of the juveniles. We had some incidents where they were coming across the tracks. There's also groups that I think that kind of migrate throughout the Twin Cities and hit park and rides. But prior to this incident, we were doing some directed patrols. Our officers are expected to drive through that lot, just like patrolling anywhere in Cottage Grove. We'd ask, you know, during the day, that's, you know, at night we expect our officers to be out looking for drunk drivers or, you know, looking for car prowlers and checking business doors and stuff. So it was more directed. After the incident, last week, or earlier this week, we had that community meeting, and we really put it out there to our citizens, and I was really impressed. You know, they didn't attack police or say this isn't happening or that, but they had some really good ideas on some things that, you know, obviously we're looking at some other deterrence. MTC is committed now to putting cameras in there. They had some different strategies that they thought. We have officers in the morning and afternoon. Not that we know that's not when the thefts and damages are happening, but it will give the citizens a chance to get up or come up and talk to the officers. But, you know, we're trying to look at the trends and when it's happening. So we are trying to establish some strategies, but more than just prior to this, it was just directed patrol. Get down there when you have a chance. Now we're making more of an effort to get down there, you know, even more.
Mm-hmm. Were there any ideas that residents threw out there that the police department had never thought of? Anything really novel? Or
well, a lot of it that they brought up, we had looked at a lot of it. We don't have control over some of it. You know, obviously it's Metro Transit lot. So some of the designs of the road, or designs of the lot, you know, the berm, taking it down, you know, we know that's a problem for a patrol standpoint. But one gentleman in the crowd brought up, you know, we do a lot of patrol on the highway as well, and he talked about, well, maybe have a turnaround right on the highway where, you know, if you're out there doing traffic enforcement anyway, maybe you can park there. You know, we've talked about, some people have thrown out the idea of a fence, and one of the citizens brought that up, and, you know, but a lot of that, it's kind of up to MTC. You know, we don't have the control over it, but it was just good that they were involved in the process, and mm-hmm. it was more than us. Right now, it was kind of, if we send a squad through, we send a squad through, but I think now the citizens know that, you know, we do care. You know, we want them to feel safe, and we're going to work with them as well.
Mm. Is there anything that people can do to make it less likely that their car will be targeted?
You know, I wish I had an answer for that, because 2 years ago we put out flyers. People are doing everything we told them. We said, don't leave any valuables out. Lock your car. They did that. You know, a lot of these, a lot of the people that had their cars broken into, they had their doors left open. They're like, I don't have anything in my car anyway. They still had their windows broken. Mm-hmm. So I would keep reminding people, obviously, lock it up, you know, and remove it. You know, if there's certain areas a lot, it seems like where there's less visibility from the highway that the cars, so you might have to walk a little further to the bus, the shelter there, but, you know, park over in a more visible spot as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, thank you very much for talking with me about this. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
That's it for the podcast this week. If you have comments on this podcast, please send them to editor@swcbulletin.com. Thanks for listening.